It's a Wednesday night, which means it's Business Unusual time. As always, Colin Cullis joins us to talk about Business Unusual. Mr. Fisher and Mr. Tropsch have got an interesting South African connection. These are guys who were in Germany pre-Nazi times, but there was a period of time where any resources journalist who really wanted to annoy Sasol would say in pieces in Business Day, for example. And Sasol, which uses the Nazi Fischer-Tropsch technology to extract oil from coal, and Sasol hated that association. But in truth, Sasol has generated fuel in South Africa using technology devised and perfected by the Nazis.
It has. The starting point, Germany, like South Africa, a lot more coal than oil. And Germany at the time was needing to find something that would be able to power their fuel needs. And so them developing this process allowed that to happen. Effectively, you take your a carbon source, typically carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, and then a hydrogen and oxygen source, typically water, add a catalyst, add pressure, add temperature, and you can start synthesizing some fuels. What we would regard, you can make diesel, you can make petrol.
I thought it was hard, but thank you for explaining it so nicely.
So that is the one plus. South Africa sort of adopts that technology in the 50s for similar reasons. We've been isolated and we need fuel. And so Sasol and more recently PetroSA refine those processes. And often the theory of how to do the chemistry is very easy to reproduce in a lab. What's hard is scaling that up to industrial levels, because you're heating something to 350 degrees, then you're pressurizing it to 3 or 4 times atmospheric pressure. And you need to do it at scale. So having one of those things go pop results in lots and lots of trouble. So that's where the real challenge comes from. It's not the underlying science of it, or the chemistry in this case, but how to make it industrially efficient and then cost effective. If it's 10 times more expensive than a normal liter of petrol, you're not going to sell a drop. Now, that in and of itself isn't the entire solution. What we do need to do, and what this piece is really about, is global warming. And the challenge there is we have too much carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere.
Yes.
And the challenge for the planet is stop putting it in and then start taking it out.
Well, that means we can inhale, just don't exhale, because there is the carbon dioxide. I've just contributed to the problem. And then there's the stuff that comes from the fossil fuels. Now, is there a difference between and what comes out of my exhaust pipe?
Yes, there is. Anything that you breathe out, you've typically consumed from something that was living. You're keeping it in a lovely little cycle, and
so the trees then will absorb my carbon dioxide, but they can't absorb the physical carbon, which is then spewed out of the exhaust pipe of the vehicle I drive.
Or rather, they can't consume it at the rate at which we're adding it.
Gotcha.
So we're kind of adding to the load. And here's where it is kind of amazing. The Earth's atmosphere is made up of 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen. There's only 1% left for everything else. And carbon dioxide is effectively, and right now at its highest level ever, 0.04%.
Is that all it is?
That's all it is.
And it's causing havoc.
And it's causing havoc. And for us to get to the point where it says, whew, we dodged the bullet, we need to reduce it by 0.01%.
Well, we've actually got to reduce about 25%, by a quarter of what
correct
is there. I mean, we've actually correct got to cut a quarter of our carbon emissions out.
That is 100% correct. Now, we're currently adding approximately, and this is where, if your mind starts wobbling,
it's wobbling.
Listen,
I'm wobbling in
this
anticipation. Yes,
37 billion tons, approximately, are being added to the atmosphere, and so we need to move that from 37 billion to zero. Then we need to start removing it. And the order of which we need to remove is somewhere between 100 billion tons to 1,000 billion tons. Now, that is a very wide range. I'm not 100% sure. I couldn't find it exactly why we can't be a little more definitive. But if we do, we effectively return to pre-industrial CO2 levels in the atmosphere, and most of the Earth's natural cycles for weather, etc., returns back to an equilibrium that we are used to.
Is there a mechanism that we can use then to do this reduction? Because it sounds like an awful lot of hard work.
It is an awful lot of hard work, and yes, there is. But this is why this evening's one is not just Business Unusual. It's business, oh my gosh, unlikely, and we will need to do something amazing to achieve it.
It's survival unusual tonight for the human race, right?
It is. There are a variety of ways that we can scrub the air, supposedly, of CO2. And one startup in Switzerland is using a method by using a catalyst, processing huge volumes of air, Which will trap the CO2 on the catalyst membrane. Once it's sufficiently full, they heat the membrane up and then remove pure CO2 from the membrane. So the little cycle is simple. It's perfect. One step. It does require energy to run the fans to move the huge volume of air across the membrane.
But if you could attach those to solar panels, for example, you could get a virtuous cycle going.
You can. Their first, sort of plant is connected to an incinerator, and so they are sucking air, running the fans from electricity generated from the incinerator, and then using the heat from the incinerator to effectively heat up those membranes, the catalysts, to remove the carbon dioxide, which they then feed into a greenhouse to help the plants in there, I think they're growing tomatoes, grow more successfully and yield greater crops. That's not removing the carbon dioxide, though. It's kind of recycling it back in a better way.
It's a good step.
Yeah. It is a good step. And again, they, like others, and there's a couple of other processes, need to now start working on how to scale that up. And there is $25 million, which isn't much. If somebody can work out a way to reduce, it's like one of those X Prize things, to remove 1 million tons of carbon out of the atmosphere in a year. So there's some people chasing that one. Quite honestly, that is a ridiculously low amount of money to offer, given what the world benefits from being able to do so.
Yeah, but here's the other problem. We've got the Paris Climate Accord, and the United States refused to sign up to the Paris Climate Accord. And, I mean, every time you, if you can bear to watch that man, what's his name, Donald Trump, opening his gob about climate change, you would think it didn't exist if you were an acolyte of Mr. Trump. And it's kind of hard for the world to fix this problem without buy-in from the world's biggest economy.
Yes, and in this case, we can call it the world's largest emitter. And that's in part why it's useful to pretend like science and climate change doesn't exist.
Yeah.
What America will need to do in order to reduce its emissions and then potentially go some way to improving it would be a drastic change to their lifestyles, ones that I think it's fair to say could definitely change their ranking in terms of an economy and definitely put them under pressure they have not ever had to deal with probably since their founding.
Is there an opportunity here for filthy ESCOM and filthy Sasol to come clean, to really participate very actively in this sort of global cleanup? You would think so.
Yes, because they have this method of using the carbon dioxide, which currently, if you're just going to grow some plants, you can't grow enough of them, and no one's going to pay you enough for that carbon dioxide. You can make fizzy drinks, but again, not enough. And you can go and just bury the stuff back in the ground, but then you get zero return for all your effort. We need to find a way to make carbon dioxide, convert it into something useful.
Into a commodity we can utilize, yeah.
Exactly. And that's where this process and Sasol and PetroSA are potentially the other side of the equation to say, what's going to make it worth somebody's while to spend a lot of money researching and developing industrial-scale CO2 scrubbers? Well, it might be that you then go and create a whole new fuel refining industry using the CO2. And the starting points would be to go to those big emitters already and that's here. It's all of Eskom's coal-fired plants. It's Sasol themselves to add these CO2 scrubbers to it. Once they're doing that, they're now basically reducing what they're putting out, and they start getting a new feedstock to start practicing and refining to improve what they're doing.
Can we just plant 1 million hectares of speckworm? It's that big, fat, leafy vegetable that's actually quite a citrusy flavor. It's quite nice if you chop it up and chuck it into a salad, you could eat it. Because speckworm is supposed to be this great carbon absorber, but we would need an Amazon or six.
That's the challenge. Worms. Yeah, we need something of magnitudes greater than the Earth to catch everything back. So we need the speckworm, and we need to change our lifestyles, and we need to stop using fossil fuels, and we need to do, and the list is long. But at some point, we also got to get carbon negative, which means we have to start removing it. Capturing it in the ocean, capturing it in forests is a way to do it. But the scale that they can remove and the pace at which they remove it means we need to intervene. We created the problem. We're going to have to get ourselves out of it.
And it's a problem we've created in a relatively short period of time. I mean, industrialization has created this problem. And industrialization has extended human life. It has improved lifestyles. It has made the world of the most pleasant place to live in human history in millennia. But the consequence is that we're destroying the very place that is so wonderful to live in.
And we've taken 200 years to get here, and we've got about 30 years to fix it. And as you said, we have some of the most powerful men in countries with the greatest emissions still questioning if it even is a thing.
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you because I've got to carry on with the rest of the show. So why don't you leave and go and solve the problem?
I'll try and do that.
Colin Cullis, what a beautiful explanation of the climate crisis and what's at the base of that climate crisis and the critical issues being presented, frankly, by carbon emissions. And it's got to make you think more than twice, at least, for the amount of carbon that you do emit without even thinking about it.